and welcome to this week's Inside Education. Our website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. This week, I bring you the second part of my interview with Eamon O'Murrahu, a man who was taught by Brian McMahon and who spent 30 years as a principal of a special school, Scolheroin. On last week's programme, Eamon reflected on his own education, on Brian McMahon, who taught him, and on his experience of teaching in Zimbabwe. This week, he discusses the area of special education. Eamon began by telling me how he first got involved in special education.
Well, this is a story against myself. I was teaching up in Ballygall in the Sacred Heart School, wonderful school, incidentally. And I had two great principals, Dina McCarthy and Michael DeHart, who I'm glad to say is still with us. Wonderful school, very traditional, but it had a great pride in what it was doing. And I had a first and second class, my first class, and I suppose we all remember our first class with particular affection. Indeed, I was just looking at a photograph of it the other day, and I can name every single pupil in that particular class. But I was doing all kinds of extraordinary things with them. Like, I remember I was doing Leaving Cert sets in mathematics with them. I was bringing them to the theatre and all kinds of trips and so on. But there was one boy in the class, and I wasn't able to get through to him. And one day his mother came to me and she said, Mr. O'Murrahu, she said, I know somebody who can help you help my child. And I have to admit, I was a little bit taken aback with this, that anybody would think that I would need help and so on. So, and from that you'll probably gather that I was a rather arrogant young teacher at the time. But anyway, I went off to meet this young, or to meet this particular person. And she was a psychologist in the child guidance clinic in the Mater Hospital. And I'll mention her name because she was an extraordinary person. Her name was Pia Castile. And I met Pia and I went in and she talked to me and she gave me suggestions and I listened and I didn't think there was very much point in what she was saying. And I went back and I continued to do what I always did. But of course, there was that nagging doubt there. So one Friday afternoon, I remember, I said, I'll try this. And it worked. And not only did I take a particularly keen interest in that boy, but I took a great interest in, for whatever reason, in the pupils that were struggling in my class.
And can you remember what it was you tried that day that made the difference?
She basically said to me, and when you think back on it, it's a fundamental principle of teaching, she said, Eamon, don't be doing the usual things that you do. I was telling her about all the great things I was doing and so on. She says, sit down beside him someday. Ask him what he's interested in. And ask him to bring that into the school and work on that. And suddenly, of course, I caught him, you know, because I mean to say, because again, I became his friend. I became interested in him. Reminds me of another great story, incidentally. And of course, he was a Dublin lad and so on. But it reminds me when I became principal of Scolheroin and I started off in the old building in Church Avenue. And there was a painter painting the roof one day, just about a month or so before I moved in. Liam Dwyer was his name, a great friend incidentally of Brendan Behan, and we became very, very great friends afterwards. But he was up on the roof and he was painting the roof, and I walked in full of my own importance and began looking at him. And he climbed down the ladder and he says, what are you looking at? Who are you? And I said, well, I said, I'm the new principal of Scolheroin. Where are you from? He said. I said, I'm from Kerry. And his next statement was, and what right have you from Kerry to come up and try and teach Dublin children? And of course, what he was saying was very important. He was actually challenging me to understand the culture and the background and the history of these people, which of course was totally different to my own. But Liam and I became great friends. He was an extraordinary character, and I became very, very fond of him, actually.
I wonder, can you give some practical examples of what mainstream schools can learn from practices and methodologies in special schools?
Well, one of the areas that springs immediately to mind, I remember when we started again in Scolheroin, we actually had to develop our own curriculum because there was no curriculum, if you like, clearly identifiable for pupils with special needs. And incidentally, I think that the NCCA has done extraordinary work in that regard since. But for instance, one of there were seven key elements in our curriculum, and one of the elements which were very important, we found, was the whole area of personal and social development, which brought in areas like human relationships and sexuality, brought in areas like work experience, where we actually linked in with the local communities, you know, and so forth. And again, when schools were looking for information in this particular regard, they would come to us in that particular regard. So that's just one example. So as we were developing, you know, what was important is that that expertise would be shared, you know, across the board. Also, I was very lucky, I suppose, insofar as that I spent all my working life in the parish of Ballygall. And I have to say I learned more about community in that parish, thanks to a wonderful priest that was there called Joe Collins. Joe Collins was before his time, coming to Ballygall, incidentally, from Wicklow, where he developed a water scheme for the people down there. But I suppose if Father Joe taught me anything, it was that what community is all about is having a sense of belonging. And one cannot have a sense of belonging unless you're accepted for what you are. Not for what people would like you to be, but accepted for what you are. And he epitomised that, and he was one of the inspirations behind the establishment of Scoil Chiaráin. And I like to think that that was a school where all the pupils within it, you know, were welcome, were accommodated, were developed and were fulfilled, irrespective of what their particular circumstances were.
Scoil Chiaráin was one of the first schools in the country to introduce schemes that have now become widespread in schools, such as the Teacher Exchange Scheme, Job Sharing and Special Needs Assistance. I asked Eamon what kind of preparation special needs assistants need in order to do their job well.
Well, there are now special courses that that special needs assistants can do for that. Indeed, I've always felt, incidentally, the colleges of education, that this could be a role that they could take on, particularly as they work so closely on. I'll answer that question in another way, maybe. I remember many years ago when a school in North Dublin had just appointed some special needs assistants, and there were difficulties in relation to how they might operate in the school. And I was asked to go in and help in that particular regard. Now, in anticipation of going in, I thought that maybe the difficulty might be that teachers weren't aware of what the role the special needs assistant had, and maybe the special needs assistant wasn't too aware of the role and responsibility of what the teacher had. Because, of course, it is fundamental that anybody working together, and especially in a special needs context, whether it be a psychologist or a speech therapist or a special needs assistant, we can only work together and cooperate when we're very clear about what our roles and responsibilities are and what the parameters are. But interestingly enough, when I went to that school, I discovered that it was not role clarification that was necessary. The difficulty was two adults working together. Teachers were not used to having another adult in the classroom. And as one teacher said it to me, and I thought that he gave a very human reaction, he said, Eamon, he says, when I'm teaching my class, he says, you know, it's time from times during the day and I like to relax and maybe act the fool a bit with them and so on. And I suppose, again, I discovered going throughout the country, there's particular sensitivities maybe in this regard when you're working in a small, confined, rural area. So I would say, first of all, role clarification, I think, is very important. There's the whole area of relationships, working with another adult, and this we're going back to shared teaching and so on. Then there is the whole sensitive area, is where does the teaching begin, if you like, and the helping start or whatever. When does the helper become a teacher and the teacher become a helper? My answer to that one is that the teacher obviously plans the work with the SNA for the particular class and will do it under the direction of the teacher and report back to the teacher. Also, what's very important in this regard, of course, if we just leave the special school situation for a moment and go back into the mainstream situation, you have there a whole combination of relationships. Like, you have the learning support resource teacher, you have the special needs assistant, and you have the mainstream teacher. Now, the very fundamental question comes in here: who's in charge of that particular team? And of course, the person that ideally, I think, should be leading that team, of course, is the class teacher. But that again necessitates, if you like, procedures, hopefully reasonably formal ones as well as informal ones, for the opportunity for that team to meet and to clarify in a particular way. The other thing, of course, about special needs is nothing is ever written in stone. And I think it's very important that once, if you like, a procedure is established or a methodology is established or some kind of policy formed about how to work together, that we constantly look at that and that people have the freedom to say, that's not working, we're going to change that. I think that is very important as well.
On 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Being a principal in a special school, from when did you start?
I started in, I qualified in 65. I did the Diploma in Special Education in 68. And I became principal in 1970.
So how is that different to being principal in a mainstream school?
Well, I suppose the first way that it is different is I knew very little about special education. I knew very little about the pupils I was going to take in. I knew, and I had to depend very, very much on the parents and the other people. Now, I was lucky insofar as that the teachers who began with me were quite experienced. In fact, they were more experienced than I was. I was also lucky that from the very, very beginning, we had to ask the parents what they felt the needs of the children, you know, were and so on. I was also lucky, as I say, that people that I encountered on the special course, people who lectured me and people who were my colleagues then, continued to advise and help me. So it was very much at that particular time, finding my feet, searching, making mistakes. Incidentally, I was asked one time, what was the advantage of doing the Diploma in Special Education? And I said, the advantage for me of doing the Diploma in Special Education is that I was able to return to my school and continue to have the confidence to make mistakes. And I think that's very important because so often as teachers, we're expected to be right. I think one of the most professional things that any teacher can say is, I don't know.
But you have to move beyond that then, either making mistakes or saying you don't know, to find out.
Oh, absolutely. And as I say, I was very, very lucky. Now, I got involved in other organisations as well that were a huge help to me. As I say, we had the National Association of Teachers in Special Education. We had what was called at the time the National Association for the Mentally Handicapped of Ireland, which actually was Inclusion Ireland. I became involved in that. I became very, very involved in working with the National Rehabilitation Board, which had the responsibility of helping us prepare pupils for employment and find work with them. And as I became very closely involved with Cope Foundation, you know, down in Cork, that was doing all kinds of research and so on. And as I said, John Birmingham was the chief executive of that organisation, and he was extremely, extremely good to me. So, and I mentioned Dr. Barbara Stokes from St. Michael's House. So I was very lucky that I was able to make connections with people, if you like, that had ploughed the same field before me. And I was also very, very fortunate that they took me under their wing and gave me great encouragement. And I suppose that's one of the things, one of the great advantages of working in the whole area of special needs. There's a bond between us that is very, very strong. It's also the kind of teaching that you won't stay in very long unless you're getting a tremendous sense of enrichment and excitement from it. And part of that enrichment and excitement is that pioneering sense, the sense that you're breaking new ground. And as I say, Scoil Chiarán was always very fortunate that not only were we breaking new ground, but we were anticipating, seeing what the trends were and doing them first in many cases. Also, another great influence for me was that for 3 years in succession in the early 70s, I went to the United States. In fact, I was fortunate to lead a teacher's group there each of the 3 years. And while in the United States, I took the opportunity to visit various special needs educational facilities. Now, it was a very interesting time also to be in the States because, of course, that was the time of the civil rights when it was coming up very much to the fore. And I suppose what was happening in the States very much was the people that were traditionally, if you like, on the edge or on the margins, were insisting on moving in center stage and taking responsibility for their own affairs. So when I came back to Ireland, I was very anxious to try and provide the same opportunity. Now, this was new. This was certainly breaking ground in giving people with disabilities and their parents a say in the direction that we were going. And I think the success to a certain extent of our school was the fact that we were listening to people and moving forward. I'm not saying that there weren't difficulties. I'm not saying that we didn't make mistakes. I'm not saying that there were times maybe when we were insensitive and we should have been more sensitive, that they were all parts of the same. But we moved forward together, and a great spirit and esprit de corps began to develop in the school, which I'm glad to say is still there.
Because teachers in special education settings don't have to teach Irish, these schools have attracted teachers from maybe more diverse backgrounds, say particularly from England or other countries. What kind of an impact do you think that has had on the special education sector?
It has had a very, very enriching aspect. Indeed, when I started in 1970, it was next to impossible to get an Irish-trained teacher into a special school. I suppose one reason perhaps was it was different, maybe it was more difficult, it was more challenging. So a lot of the people that we, in fact, virtually all of the people that we appointed in the initial years were people from different backgrounds. And they brought with them a tremendous combination of expertise, because, as we know, each college of education will have its strengths. And these people came from a variety of colleges of education in Northern Ireland, in England, in Scotland, and indeed further afield. And it was amazing to see the fusion of that kind of expertise, you know, taking place. Also, when we were interviewing during that time for teachers, of course, we were matching very, very often the perceived need that was in the school, whether it be a curricular area or particular experiences we wanted to give, with these people. And that was absolutely marvellous. Now, it was also very encouraging, of course, then as the links between the mainstream and special school began to develop, that more and more Irish teachers actually became in. So you have a wonderful mix in the special school, at least you had until quite recently, of that combination of training and background and expertise. And it brought a great richness and led for some very, very interesting professional discussions at staff meetings and so on.
In the 1990s, Eamon, you wrote that you find the term special increasingly problematic in terms of education. Do you still feel that way, and why did you feel that way at the time?
I felt it, I was very pleased, and indeed I'm very proud, to have worked in special education. But as I said earlier, when I started, special education was perceived to a large extent to be a different kind of education for different people in a different kind of school. And as I progressed in Scolchiron over the years, I saw, you know, that concept began to become disregarded. So I don't like the word special, because the word special implies different, and we're not working with different pupils. We're working with the same pupils. I remember the late Dr. Barry, who was the medical director of the Central Remedial Clinic, and again another man, incidentally, who took me under his wing and who was a huge inspiration to me. But I remember he reminding us at a case conference one day that people with special needs have much more in common with other people than they have differences. So I think there's a need to move away to a certain extent from the differences, and particularly from a teaching point of view, concentrate, if you like, on, I love the word incidentally, that commonality, if you like, that we all have. Special education to me, now if I was asked what is special education, seeing that I've a problem with the definition, special education to me is accessing the curriculum for the pupil with special needs through the relationship that we have with the pupil. I think it is the relationship that is absolutely paramount. The curriculum is very much in the meat of the sandwich. The curriculum is the vehicle that we use maybe to further develop the pupil and so forth. And again, when we anticipate, and this is why I mentioned earlier that personal social development was such a fundamental plank of the curriculum, I think that this is a fundamental question, I think, for all schools. And I remember asking it one time at a staff meeting in our own school, and I think from time to time, these are important questions to ask. Questions such as, who is this school for? Who do we include? Why? Who do we exclude? Why? And I think they will give us an indication very often about to what extent we are complying with the mission statement. The mission statement can be very aspirational, but I think it must be taken down from time to time. I think we have to look at it at staff meetings from time to time, you know, and so on. So to go back to your question, if special means working out particular methodologies in a particular place in order to ensure that children who have challenges will improve, I've no difficulty with that. But I don't want the word special to mean that the person is different and should be treated differently. I think they must be treated the same. Now, when I say treated the same, obviously the whole question of differentiation comes in and so forth. But they should be given the same opportunities as anybody else to reach their full potential. Now, teachers sometimes maybe get a little bit worried about that, because sometimes we want everybody to achieve the same things. They won't achieve the same things. But I think as long as we're happy that they have achieved their full potential. Incidentally, Brendan Kennelly has, I remember, one of my favourite poets, incidentally. But he has one poem that I absolutely love, because it's called The Good. And he defines goodness or success, I think, in the context of vulnerability. Because when one is vulnerable, one is open. One is generous. And if you don't mind, I'd like to say it. The good are vulnerable as any bird in flight. They do not think of safety, are blind to possible extinction, and when most vulnerable are most themselves. The good are real as the sun, are best perceived through clouds of casual corruption. They cannot kill the luminous efficiency that shines on city, sea and wilderness, fastidiously revealing one man to another, who yet will not accept responsibilities of light. The good inclined to praise, to have the knack of seeing that the best is not destroyed, although forever threatened. The good go naked in all weathers, and by their nakedness rebuke the small protective sanities that hide men from themselves. The good are difficult to see, though open, rare, destructible. Always they retain a kind of youth, the vulnerable grace of any bird in flight, content to be itself, accomplished master and potential victim, accepting what the earth or sky intends. I think I know one or two among my friends. Now that to me captures, I think, what our attitude should be, you know, to people in general. I think that society in general, indeed when we hear about recession and economics and all the rest of it and so on, I think it is sad that sometimes we equate success with material belongings and so on. And here's our poet, and our poets, I think, very often are the people that make us rethink what our values are. And Brendan Kennelly is great at that. And basically he's saying that the good person is the person that's vulnerable, the person that's naked, the person that's content to be themselves, the person that accepts what is.
Eamon, what have you learned about education from your time in special education?
Wow, that's a big question, Sean. What have I learned about education? I've learned that there are no answers. I have learned that I must try and have respect for the person that's in front of me. I have learned that I must resist trying to make them the same as everybody else. I have learned that if I am to teach that pupil, I must engage in learning myself. I have learned that I must learn with the pupil. I must give that pupil an opportunity to teach me. I have learned that I have to let go of my pride. My pride may be in my classroom, what I want. I've learned that I must experiment. I've learned that I must accept, this is hard at times, accept the environment that that pupil comes from. It's his or her environment. I've learned to be careful to say that's wrong. It might be very right for that pupil in those particular circumstances to do what what he's doing. And in that context, I have learned that whereas I can judge the action of a pupil and say whether he was right or wrong in doing that, I have to hesitate before I say he was wrong in doing it.
That's like a creed for a teacher.
It is, and actually only last night I was researching some other stuff, and unfortunately I don't have it here, and it was a lovely piece, and I came across what's called the Self-Esteem Creed. It was a piece that we used in a liturgy many, many years ago, where in fact it is the person saying, I believe in myself because I am good. And I suppose what children are asking today, children of all ages, I think, are asking in schools, look, avoid the rush, please. Will you take some time to let us talk? I'd love if there was a time. In fact, Brian McMahon, every Friday evening, I'm going back to my teacher again, he used to tell us a story. He began the week with a story, as I said earlier, and he ended the week with telling a story. And he would always end the story on a high point, just when we were gasping to find out what was next. And he'd say, now, if you're good next week, we'll continue the story. And during the ensuing week, he would say, be careful, lads. We mightn't have that story. And I'd say, there's the power of story, actually. The power, you know, again, there's the sense of wonder. The other thing that I learned, I think, from special education, that every single person has extraordinary ability. It mightn't be the ability to read. It mightn't be the ability to do sums. It could be the ability to sing, to draw, to relate, to help, or whatever. But our job is to find it. Again, Brian McMahon said to me one time, he said, every child has a button, but you must know when to press it. So I suppose when I'm making as a plea here, that rather than the frenetic day, you know, that we have and we're trying to get so many things done, fill a timetable and so on, I think there's a time to relax and a time to enjoy each other, because it's through enjoying each other that we learn about each other.
And that was Eamon O'Murrahu concluding my two-part interview with him. Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That email address again is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. I'd love to hear your feedback and your suggestions for future programmes. Thanks to my guest on the programme this week, Eamon O'Murrahu. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you.